All right, we're going to take a deeper look now into the tragic case of Bella Bond, the 2.5-year-old girl allegedly murdered by her mother's boyfriend, Michael McCarthy. As this awful story unfolded, we learned that both McCarthy and Bella's mother, Rochelle Bond, were addicted to heroin. We also learned this, that Rochelle Bond lost custody of her two older children, that DCF was involved twice with her family, that Rochelle Bond had a lengthy criminal record, including drug possession, assault, theft, and prostitution, and that Michael McCarthy, the alleged killer, also had a criminal record and serious mental issues. So why didn't the State Department of Children and Families remove baby Bella from the home, especially given her mother's and McCarthy's problems with drug addiction? To talk more about some of the questions that all this raises, we're joined by Dr. Joseph Strand. He's the medical director of CASEL, that stands for Clean and Sober Teens Living Empowered, and he's an instructor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. And Dr. Strand, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony.
I should also mention that you're the author of the forthcoming book, Do You Really Get Mad at Me? Finding Value in Yourself and Others Through Empathy and Connection.
It's actually, Do You Really Get Me? Which is even better.
Okay, good. I misread that. Forgive me
No, I don't. I won't get mad at you.
Okay. I was just testing you, actually.
Thank you.
All right. So, serious question. You've worked with parents and teens who struggle with addiction. At what point is it so unsafe that someone's child needs to be taken away? Is there a standard for this?
You know, there isn't a standard that I think we can apply to everyone. But certainly there comes a point where it's pretty clear that a parent just cannot take care of their child. And I think this is what is so absolutely stunning about addiction, that the brain is so overwhelmed that even this most primitive, basic instinct to care for one's offspring is overwhelmed.
Yeah. So this raises the question, you know, at what point does addiction make someone unfit to be a parent? Because, of course, and we were talking about this earlier in the show, when it comes to children being cared for, we are loath to remove them from their parents. But at what point does addiction actually make someone unfit?
Well, I think it's based on an individual. And what would be terrific is if a parent was able to say, look, I love my child, and by loving my child, I am going to temporarily give up custody of that child. The most difficult part about that is that the child then has to know that they still have value. That's really important. So I wish that I could give you a clear-cut answer. If there was a clear-cut answer, I think DCF and other agencies would already be using it.
Yeah.
But I really think that that's that really odd, fine line. Addiction itself is such a difficult topic for us to discuss. I'm just so glad that it's coming out into the open. I just want to say that addiction is not a crime, but can lead to them, and that's what we've seen here.
Yeah. What's the what's sort of the big lesson or the big thing that we need to pay attention that comes out of this terrible, tragic story about Bella Bond and addiction?
I think the big lesson is just how one person's addiction can have an effect on other people's brains. And that's really an important metaphor. It's sort of like cancer in some ways. You know, cancer eats up a person from the inside, but the metastases, the parts of the cancer that go to other parts of the body, are the things that can really kill you. In addiction, the metastases are the other people who are affected by that addiction. So I do think that there is a moment when DCF or any other agency can say, you know what, you're not safe. It's not about your value as a parent. But at this point in time, maybe it's because you've been in a treatment more than 3 times. I mean, we can set a number. But ultimately, what it's going to come down to is a parent saying, I love my child, and therefore I am going to at least temporarily give them to the care and custody of someone who can take care of them.
But you're saying that should come down to the parent. But, I mean, doesn't the addiction get in the way of a parent being able to make that choice?
And I don't want to imply that the parent is the sole owner of that choice.
Right.
But I do hope that a parent, when they're in the position of saying, you know, you can either potentially hurt your child or give them up, that they're going to give them over to DCF. So it is a complex situation. A lot of people need to be involved in it. And the assessment comes from an ongoing really evaluation of who this parent is and what they can do. what's really interesting is from a brain point of view, there's a chemical called dopamine, mm-hmm. which is a brain chemical of pleasure. It's an ancient molecule. That's the chemical that's released with all drugs and alcohol. But it interferes with another important chemical of pleasure called oxytocin. Not OxyContin, but oxytocin. That's the chemical that's released when somebody says, Anthony, this is the best show I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And you get that rush.
Mm-hmm.
It's this chemical that binds a person to each other. That chemical is blocked by drugs and alcohol. So you're right. A parent may not have the ability to say, oh, I'm in such distress, I'm going to give my child up, because what they do, they've trained their brain when they're in distress, they go get high.
Yeah, yeah. So I want to ask you sort of about some specifics about this case. We learned a lot about Michael McCarthy, who allegedly punched Bella Bond to death. From 2005 to 2010, he was arrested 10 times, including for being in the presence of heroin. Rochelle Bond was a regular at the methadone clinic with a history at DCF. You know, when we talk about what needs to change at an institution like DCF, is it your sense that folks there are trained to deal with this issue of addiction?
Without injuring the egos of any of my DCF colleagues, I don't think they are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they quite understand really what addiction is in that sense. The important part is that the public understand it's not a moral issue. Nobody is at fault with addiction.
Right.
It's not a crime. We can hate the addiction, but not the addict. We have to treat the addict. But what DCF really does need to know is how do they make valid assessments in an ongoing way so that there's some continuity between the child, the parent, and the caregiver. That comes with time. That comes with experience. And the way we do that is really, I think, to fund more, get more people in there. It's a really tough job to go into a stranger's home and try to decide what's going on.
Yeah,
it's scary.
Of course it is. I want to talk to you about this term that we use, and I appreciate it, that we're hearing increasingly today with this opiate addiction crisis around the state that addiction is a disease, and it's important to refer to it as a disease as opposed to a moral failure or something like that. But isn't it also different than a disease? In other words, an addict can really hurt people around him or her, as we saw in the case of the Bella Bond case. Not that it was necessarily the addiction being the only source of the hurt, but it seems to have contributed in a big way.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we are treading fine line with disease to begin with, because disease itself, the disease model, brings its own stigma.
Yeah.
You know, now a person's sick. Can I catch it from them? Are they infectious? Are they contagious? But compare it again to diabetes, let's say.
Yeah.
You know, in diabetes, a person can eat a candy bar if they have diabetes, and then they will take more insulin. But if they don't look after themselves, they're going to lose their toes, their feet, their limbs. They're going to die. And when they do, they're going to hurt all the people around them who are in their life, who have cared for them. Addiction has to be seen in this way. It has to be seen as a disease process that is chronic, that is ongoing, which means we don't really know what a good outcome is.
Hmm.
In diabetes, we can measure someone's glucose. We can measure other metabolites and say, this person's diabetes is under control. But what's the outcome for addiction?
Right.
Is it, they're going to be sober for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years?
Right. We talk about recovery. We never talk about the addiction as cure.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so we have to really look at quality of life as a measurement. You know, is the quality of life of someone such that they are working every day, they're maybe going to college, or they're graduating high school? Because remember, I work with adolescents. You know, how do we measure recovery in them? Because they've got a life ahead of them. So we're trying to say, if they graduate high school, that's a quality of life measure. If they're in college, that's a quality of life measure. So addiction is a disease, but we need to be very cautious that we don't then vilify folks because now they're sick.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about response to this. Governor Baker's announced that National Prescription Drug Take Back Day will take place tomorrow, and this will provide 170 drop-off sites across Massachusetts for people to drop off their unused prescription drugs. We know from surveys that a lot of folks get hooked on opioids by starting with prescription drugs. Is this a good idea? Does this help?
I think it's a terrific idea because it gets those potentially addictive medications out of the medicine cabinet where anybody can have access to them. I think it's great. I don't know if you know the numbers, Anthony, but back in 2007, enough Vicodin, which is a opioid equivalent, right? If we took all the morphine, all the Percocet, all the Oxy that was prescribed and converted it to Vicodin, enough Vicodin was prescribed so that every person in the United States could get 5 milligrams of Vicodin every 4 hours for 3 weeks.
That's amazing.
It's a wow number. I mean, we've completely overprescribed this. So yeah, take them back, bring them in, but not just opioids. Anything that you have in your cabinet that you don't need, whether it's an antidepressant, an antipsychotic, an antihypertensive. Kids, and I don't mean to put the idea in your heads, but kids are incredibly inventive. They'll find something in the cabinet like Robitussin.
Yeah.
And they'll take it because they want to get high.
So a lot of talk about what has to happen to respond to this addiction crisis across the state. What are you not hearing that you'd like to hear more of in terms of productive responses to it?
Well, I think we have a pretty good handle on treatment, although we're not exactly sure what an outcome is. But one of the things I'd like to talk about is how do we do the prevention? And I don't know if you know that we've started a nonprofit company called Drug Story Theater. And what we've done is we take kids in the early stages of recovery. We've taught them improvisational theater, working with Improv Boston. They then create their own story about the seduction addiction, recovery from drugs and alcohol. That gets crafted into a show by a professor from Massasoit, Nicole Conlon. And those kids are going to be performing it for middle schools and high schools, so the treatment of one becomes a prevention of many. So what are we doing? We're taking kids and giving them treatment and reminding them of their value. So when they stand in front of an audience and they get this round of applause, that stimulates oxytocin. That stimulates this chemical of pleasure that says, I have value, and we believe that will overcome the dopamine. Plus, we send a message to the other kids. You know what? You've got choices. You can get high, and you'll use dopamine, but the price you pay is trust.
Hmm. Well, this sounds like a wonderful story that we're going to have to check in on later. The Drug Story Theater.
Yes, please. The first performance, October 6th, Thursday night, Marshfield High School, 7 o'clock.
All right. Sounds like a great program. Dr. Joseph Schrand is the medical director of CASEL and an instructor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's also the author of the forthcoming book that I'm actually going to read correctly this time. Do You Really Get Me? Finding Value in Yourself and Others Through Empathy and Connection. Dr. Schrand, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Anthony.
And listeners, stay with us. Coming up, what goes into curating the Boston Calling music lineup? Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.